We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And I just thought, if I'm ever going to be a head coach, the best way for me to be the best one I can be is to just stay with this.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
Hello and welcome once again to Beyond the Game. I am Ken Mulgammon, 15-year NFL veteran, joined as always by my good friend, the OG of player development in the NFL, Lamont Winston. And of course, Lamont, each and every week, each and every other week, maybe, just kind of depends on how you and I are doing things. We talk about players' lives off the field when the play clock continues to run that the game clock is not. And now, we're going to talk about a lot of things today. We got a great show lined up. Bobby April, special teams coach in the NFL for, I believe, 20 years or 25 years, if I added up right. But I mean, just crazy that he coached with the Falcons, the Steelers, the Saints, the Rams, the Bills, the Eagles, the Raiders. Of course, that's where you went across him a little bit, the Jets and the Titans, and then had some stints in college with Southern Miss, Tulane, Arizona, Southern Cal, Ohio State, and LSU. I mean, just amazing. But first and foremost, good to see you again, Lamont. We just got back from the induction ceremonies, and that was a great time. How you doing?
Kendall, I'm doing fantastic. You know, it's, to getting down to Canton, and you get down there, and, you know, you just start seeing all the fanfare, and it gets your juices going, you know, about, yeah. I had just previously had a preseason game with the Raiders. Down there, so that was good. But you know, seeing all you guys, the players, the coaches, to celebrate Coach Vermeil was fantastic. And you know, it really bodes. You know, we're all around each other. It's not Kendall the player. It's not Willie Rose right. The player. It's not Trent the player. You know, it's the people. It's the relationships. And to watch people's families grown, they transitioned out the game extremely well. It made me, as a person that was kind of like behind the scenes preparing for transition for him, it made me feel good that we did some things right.
Yeah, it's always amazing to me. And I was talking to a friend about this. I'm always amazed at how I get around people and they remember me, and I don't expect them to. I mean, I remember them, but I just have this expectation that I was just a small cog in the wheel as a long snapper. And I was, but it's really taught me that you take care of your relationships and they take care of you. And of course, that's something you stress all the time. That's something we're going to talk about with Bobby as well, because I mean, relationships are what life are. And I think to be effective, anything you do, you have to have good ones. You have to cultivate it. I think you have to be intentional and understand that sometimes those relationships, you have to talk about things that are hard or that people need to deal with. And, you know, that's what you did for so very long and still do. I mean, in fact, Tell people a little bit about you, what you do quickly, and what website they would go to.
Well, you know, they can go to thewinstongroup.biz to learn a little bit more about me and what we do with the Winston Group, which is really, you know, kind of an offspring of my career working with players, coaches and their families and people in football operations. But, you know, Kendall, that's a good spot to find me. I'm on LinkedIn, obviously on Twitter. But, you know, again, it's you know, you're looking at Coach April, you know, 20 plus years. And when you're the special teams coach, I mean, that, and we'll get into this, but that's a unique coach, because that's the only coach that touches every freaking player on the team, right? Yeah. And you know, the other unique thing about it is he doesn't have – his assistant, they don't have time. They don't have a lot of time. And so what happens is he gets a chance to really know players personally. And for the couple of snaps they're going to be with him, everybody trusts the special teams coach, you know. And so again, you know, it's a 20 plus year. You're doing things right. You're doing something right. 20 years. And you spoke of you being a small cog. Well, I tell you this, 15 years. Okay. You did something right as a small cog. And the cool thing about it is when you look at a cog in a, I'm a cyclist. So if one of my, you know, sprockets, break on my hub for my chain, I'm done.
Right.
So little sprockets, little cogs are very important, Kendall.
Yeah, it really is. And like you talked about it earlier about it, because I wanted to get in there. If people want to follow you, they can go to at Lamont Winston. That's LAMONTE Winston for Twitter. For me, it's at Kendall Gammon. And it is. But I think that sometimes is what you were called to do in your side of the business, and of course Bobby with the special teams, and I just try to do it in general, which is make sure people understand that they know that they matter and that they make a difference, and generally try to make them understand. I think also that, you know, for us, sports, football, it's what we do, it's not who we are. And to circle back to what you talked about this weekend, is we got to see who people are. Not we know what they did, we were around them then, but seeing that other side of people is just a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, right now, you know, it's this is this show for our listeners. This is for you to take this information and apply it to where you are in your day to day, because it's not unique for pro football players or for pro athletes. Right. But there are some unique parts to it. But hopefully, we try to share, you know, and our guests try to share some nuggets that people can apply in their own lives. You know, right now in training camp, the Chiefs are up there and they're doing their thing. We've talked earlier in our earlier shows, they've left everything they had going on. They had to leave and go, and now they're trying to make a football team, and they're trying to do it under pressure, and they're trying to do it consistently under pressure every single day, knowing that they have things, other things in their lives that may not be as settled as they would like.
Right. But
at the end of the day, you can't bring that between stripes, right?
Yeah.
The performance part is not going to happen. Is that correct, Kendall?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You're correct. And yeah, that's one of the things we're going to talk about again with Bobby, is those 25 years of being in those camps. And I think that's just a great segue. So, you know, without further ado, we're going to bring Bobby in here. He was a coach of mine for 6 of my 15 years, and I look forward to, you know, getting some nuggets from him today. So with that, let's bring Bobby on. First and foremost, on behalf of Lamont and myself, really appreciate you coming on, Bobby.
Oh, it's an honor to be on with you guys. I appreciate it. Enjoyed working with both of you, and glad to be here today with both of you.
Coach April, how you doing? How you been doing these days?
Good, Lamont. Good to see you again, partner.
Absolutely. Coach April and I spent 2 years at Oakland, changing that culture, right? We were revamping that 50-year culture into bringing it into today's National Football League.
So, Bobby, talk to me. Was I correct? Was it 25 years from the NFL side of things?
Yeah, 25 seasons. Yeah, I took one season I took, I guess you would call it a sabbatical. I took a year off because my daughter was changing schools during her senior year if I would have taken a job, and I didn't really want that to happen.
That's awesome. I set it up a year, and it
worked out great. It worked out great. It worked out great for my daughter, too.
Well, cool. So I want to start off with this. The one thing that I was always impressed with you, first time I met you and it was in meetings, was the fact that how much attention you paid. I know this is a little thing, but how much attention you paid to the names of the guys that you were coaching. But not only that, I mean, you knew their high school mascot. You knew, their college mascot. And I would look at the guys and I would see it was unfortunately something they weren't completely used to in terms of, of course everybody knows the Stars, but some of the guys that are a little bit lower on the totem pole, it sometimes is, hey, big guy or champ or what's up, buddy. Yet you took the time to personally connect with people. Can you talk about that?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I haven't given any thought into why I did that because it doesn't usually come up in my mind. But I think the background of that would probably be my love for my community where I grew up and my connection with it. And that I always, felt like I was representing the people who helped me get to where I was at, because I was very fortunate in my career, the timing and so many other things. I mean, I could think of, a ton of people as I grew up in my generation of high school prep ball in New Orleans that would have been fantastic coaches and could have been in my place very easily. And then I also had, 13 years of recruiting. And so I was used to being in high schools and knowing how important the high school experience was for that player. And you weren't that far removed from it, really.
Right.
In some cases, maybe only 4 or 5 years from where you were from. So I think that made me, interested in where the guy grew up, which school he went to. I probably had been in some of those schools. Well, not probably. I mean, there were a lot of players I had recruited that I ended up.
Yeah.
So, I would think that would be it more than anything else. I don't think it was anything I consciously planned on doing. It just happened.
Right.
So coach, so with that, so why special teams? I mean, I think sometimes people don't realize the special teams coaches were probably a running back coach at one time or a linebacker coach or why special teams? Why was that your calling card through your pro career?
Well, it didn't start out that way. I was a secondary coach at USC. We had a bunch of really good players. I mean, really good players. Mark Carrier, Junior Seau, Rodney. I mean, we had just a loaded deck. It's unfortunate we didn't win a national championship for those players because they were really good. I went on to Ohio State. I was trying to get into the NFL. I had a lot of contacts, and I just seemed to be something got in the way of me getting a secondary job, whatever it was. I just didn't get it, And maybe it was lack of ability, probably. But anyway, I just missed out on them. So I had an opportunity to go with Jerry Glanville to be the tight end coach and the special teams coach. And fortunately in my career, I had coached every position, or not every position, but both sides of the ball in high school and in college. And so, because I started out as a tight end coach at Tulane when I first started. But my main area was the secondary and defense. And I just didn't, I couldn't get in. So I really didn't, I was really hoping to be a secondary coach. I had the opportunity to go to Atlanta. After 3 years, Jerry Glanville had gotten fired. And June Jones was in line to be the coach. And he was going to make me the secondary coach. And I'd given the Steelers, my word, I was going to go to the Steelers a few days before. They had taken a while now, and the Steelers were patient with me. They had taken a while to name June the coach, and the Steelers were kind of waiting, you know. So I'd given them a deadline, and then once the deadline hit, I committed to go there. And I was hoping to be the secondary coach there one day as well, and almost had a chance and wanted to do that. When Dom Capers left to be the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, Dick LeBeau moved from secondary to coordinator. And I was hoping after that 1 year at Pittsburgh to be the secondary coach, but it didn't work out. And after that, by the time I had another opportunity to actually be a secondary coach, and it was with Coach LeBeau when he got the job at Cincinnati, by the time that had happened, I was pretty much under the assumption that the best way for me to be a head coach was to stay with special teams, because it's a natural transition. You talk to the whole team. You have to organize the whole team. I mean, you may have DeBrickashaw Ferguson in one meeting, and the very next meeting, you know, you got Andre Hastings, you know, you got a lineman, then you got a wide receiver. Then you have a linebacker, you have a tight end, and then you had to motivate him too. So I was learning how to be more of a motivator and being able to be in front of the team more, be able to deal with the team more. And I just thought, if I'm ever going to be a head coach, the best way for me to be the best one I can be is to just stay with this. So that's how I kind of fell into it a little bit. And then I realized it was what I really wanted to do. And I loved it. I really loved it.
Well, Coach, I just want to make – I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you explained that, because I really wanted to – that was my little sneaky way of really validating what Kendall said, because that's why – that was the unique part of Bobby April, because you had to speak to every player. You had to deal with every player. You had to motivate them in short spurts of time. You had to get a chance to – and, you know, these guys, if they don't feel you know them, they're not going to connect with you. Right. And so that's where that personal, that uniqueness of Bobby April came from, as Kendall was speaking about as a player. Right. Guys sitting in that audience and they're hearing you, and everybody is respecting the special teams meeting. So, again, Coach, that just really reflects why you've been in this business for 25 years. As a lot of people came through your doors, I can imagine. So. That's touching a lot of people and a lot of lives, to say the least. So, Coach, with that, let me ask you a question. So, as a special teams coach, we're talking about unique relationships you got to have with players. Can you give us an example, maybe, of an opportunity, a time when maybe, player may have come to you and the fact that he trusted you, that he was able to talk to you, that, you know, situation where a guy, no names, obviously, but situation where a guy came to you, hey, Coach, I got this going on. Can, you know, this is what's wrong with me. Or you detected something that was wrong with one of your players. Mm-hmm. And he trusts you enough to confide in you.
Well, I've had a lot of conversations, with the players over a lot of different things. I think I don't know if I ever had a situation where we delved too much into things personally. Mostly it was about profession. I'm sure my mind's escaping me some things where something was going on in a guy's life. A lot of times it was just the opposite, Lamont, where I could sense something was wrong, or I saw the guy was heading in the wrong direction. And, I would bring him in and see if I could keep his career going, because I could see it was going on a dead end path. And I think you and I have talked about one particular guy that I thought if he continued on this path, you know, it's going to be hard for him to stay in the league.
Sure.
And so some of those kind of things, I had, you know, some opportunities on some issues where I could talk to the guy as a surrogate father, because some of the guys I had, I'd coached their dads. I mean,
they
had long enough careers, or I had coached long enough that I had had their, you know, I had had their dads. And that was kind of a unique situation. Mm. But a lot of guys came to me primarily on, you know, what they needed to do to keep it going professionally. And I would say that was the bulk of my deal with guys.
But
most of the time it was guys came to me. If I could really sense that a guy was maybe doing something with marijuana, or, you know, I could see he wasn't all there. You know, yeah. I could just tell from being around long enough. I would address some of those things with him. Very few players came to me with saying, I got a drug problem, can you help me?
Yeah.
In fact, none did. But sometimes I could sense something was wrong, especially if I, you know, really knew the guy. And because sometimes it takes a while to know him. And recently in the NFL, the roster changes so fast. You know, what you have year one, year three, you may have 60% of the guys that you coach could be not even on the team anymore.
Wow.
Where, you know, when I first started, at least the first 3 years before free agency, I mean, I had the same special teams unit. I mean, we had a couple of changes, but almost the same guys played the same positions for 3 years. That's not like that anymore.
Yeah, that's unique. Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit. I'm going to tell a story. You may or may not remember it. It has to do with you and me, Bobby. But talk about transparent communication, because when you came to the Steelers and I was there already, I'd been in the league a few years, and I was considered fairly decent at what I was doing as a long snapper. At least I thought
you were considered very well, more than that.
Well, I know, but we're going to get to it. But here's where we're going to get to it was you talked to me because I had not been asked to block after I was snapped. I was just told to throw the ball back, and my guards were helping out. And you said, this is something I need you to do. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, I haven't been asked before, but I mean, you think I can do this? And your response was really helped move my career. You're like, well, I hope so, because that's what I need, because if not, then I've got to look at something else. And while that really kind of punched me in the mouth a little bit, it also was just like, okay, at least I know exactly where I stand and exactly what I need to do and what he expects of me. And you know, over my years, and maybe you can speak to this, but I played for a lot of coaches and was around a lot of people in general that they don't tell you exactly what's going on. They expect you to read their mind, or they just don't even want to deal with it. And that's something I think there's maybe not unique to you, certainly, because there's lots of communication, but you did it very, very well. And I think that's something to be appreciated. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, that particular deal, I do remember.
Okay.
The way you guys did the protection, particularly on the side, you know, where the guys would set and zone set.
Yeah.
It was more like a zone. They had to take two. They had to have kind of a take two mentality.
Right.
And I had seen that before, and I knew that. But most of the league was not doing that.
Right.
Really, at that time, you had a couple of teams – that were still using the tight formation, and, you know, they just wouldn't block the end man on the line, and the center didn't have to protect. But the league in general, and in majority, the center was blocking. And it wasn't going to be long, whether it was with the Steelers or somebody else, somebody was going to actually block. So
right.
That was just a part of the profession that you needed to transgress to. So it was an easy call for me to do that, because it really kind of wasn't my opinion. you know, it was it kind of was my opinion, but it was more fact than opinion.
Right.
From that point on, everywhere you went, I bet you had the block, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, to go on down the line a little bit, you left to go to New Orleans, and then I ended up following after that, after the training camp. And so we spent 6 years together.
Yeah,
but I will say this, you mentioned that you didn't talk a whole bunch to your players about the personal things to a degree, but I will say this, and I don't know if you remember, but, you know, both my kids were born in New Orleans, and both my kids were at NICU at birth and had multiple surgeries. And so I do remember, you know, discussing these things, some of these things with you and nobody else, coach wise, because I just didn't have that relationship with them. And I think, you know, perhaps that's one of the things that really led to a pretty productive career as well. You know, backing up a little bit, You've had some unique relationships with some players who've done. I remember joking with you a little bit of, you know, you coached Deion Sanders, and it's not like he couldn't run and act like he didn't have some confidence. And I think when we played them in the Super Bowl, you told me some stories just how you two could kind of rib each other a little bit and have a good time. And I think back then that might have been a little bit unique, even though I don't think it should be.
Well, the unique thing about Deion and he is a unique guy, mm-hmm. and, you know, I mean, he's got a presence, you know, he's Deion. I mean, he's primetime.
Yeah.
But I remember one of the things, and I used to tell a lot of the teams this, because he's kind of a bigger than life person in
right.
the NFL. And, if a player, like if I said, you know, come to my office, I need to talk to you, and I would have to go chase him down, I would say, you know what, you know this guy named Deion Sanders. Of course, they would know who he is. I said, the first time I ever was an NFL coach, I was a rookie coach, and he'd only been in the league 1 year, but he could have been in 50 years with the prominence he had in the Falcon organization. I wanted to talk to him one on one. I said, you know, after practice, come up into my office. I want to speak with you. And when I got up to my office, he was already waiting for me. And he was a yes, sir. You know, he was a yes, sir, no, sir. I mean, his mother and father raised him well. I mean, he never cussed or anything, never drank and none of that stuff. So he's a little different than people perceive. And it kind of started where he said, look, if you can get these guys to block for me, he said, I'm going to make you a household name. And I just sat there. I went, what? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm going to run back enough kicks. You're going to be a famous NFL coach. Hey, he told me that. My very first.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know what? Yeah, he kind of did. Because in Atlanta, we were really good.
And yeah,
a lot was because of him. Maybe all, not all, because then we had a lot of good players, and we had our ups and downs too. I mean, you know, he would, ribbing type things. But I remember one Thanksgiving day. You know, you practice early in the morning, and we got out there quick, and we were gonna, you know, we didn't have a chance to catch punts, and so I said after practice, you know, we're going to catch punts. And so he went in, and I had to go get him. And he was complaining. He wasn't cussing, because he doesn't cuss. At least he didn't then. And he was going, man, it's Thanksgiving. And I said, I don't care. So anyway, then I ended up fining him for being late. And he said, you know, I can't believe it was Thanksgiving. And then, you know, a little time after that, he'd always be out there early and be out there
right.
one time for everything. And he'd always go, if it ain't Thanksgiving, you know, I'm going to be here. So there was some things in there that he was, you know, cause he's a funny guy. Now. He's a funny guy. I mean, he's done a great job of coaching.
Yeah.
Golly. I mean, he's just been successful in everything, you know, with the commercials, with the broadcasting. he's just a successful guy, and man, I'm real happy for him.
Well, you know, I think, you know, guy like with Deion, you know, because of his persona, like you mentioned, that bigger than life type thing, you know, you tend to think people like that really don't listen and watch, but he's listening and watching. He's around a lot of good coaches, right? He wanted to be a head coach. So he was absorbing. When people didn't think he was absorbing and watching, he was absorbing it when he was watching. And preparing himself for his opportunities. Because you're right. I mean, everywhere he's gone, he's been successful.
Everything he does.
Yeah.
Everything he does. You know, the amazing thing about him, a lot of people, you know, they just see the talent. Yeah. Because it's so rare. But he is really competitive. I mean, he did not want to make a fair catch. He did not want to take a touchback. I'll guarantee you, when he was playing for the Braves, and you know that one of those years when I was coaching him, he played both. I remember him flying in for one of the games in San Diego from playing in a baseball game the night before. And I'll guarantee you, I wasn't around him in baseball. I went to a bunch of the games to watch him with the Braves. But I guarantee you, if it was two outs and he was in the batter's box, he was dying for that guy to get on so he could get up to the plate. That's just the kind of guy. He's competitive as hell. And, his coaching career, what he's done at Jackson State has really lit a fire, I know, in that community and across all of that SWAC conference, if it's still called a SWAC, I think it is. So he's doing some great stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, I will say this. He's definitely changed the game in recruiting. Because you're getting some top kids that are that would normally be going to Power Fives, and they're going to go play for him at Jackson State and SWAC, and the HBCU conference type football. So he's done a great, but again, that's a testament to you. I mean, think about that. You get ready. You guys are playing a game. This guy's got to fly in and play the next day in the NFL. I mean, sometimes without a whole bunch of preparation between time he lands and the time he gets up in the morning, right?
Exactly.
And your special teams, everybody else got to kind of work around it. So that's a testament to you, because a lot of coaches couldn't handle that, to be quite honest.
He was really easy to work with because he was always punctual. He was always respectful. And, his talent was what his talent is, but he's got those other attributes too, that kind of get lost in the shuffle when one stands out so much like his talent does.
Well, I hope some of our younger listeners who are, five-star, Kendall, are listening to this, right?
Yeah.
Coach is giving him some backdrop on a 10-star, right? So, that he's humble, he works hard, he's respectful, and he shows up and he performs.
Yeah, that was the point I always tried to make to a guy that wasn't punctual.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a second. This guy is who he is, and he could still do all those other things because he was doing it right. Can't you do the right things?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty simple question to ask a kid.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Can't you just do it right?
Right. Well, that was one of Coach Vermeil's mantras. Just do the right things right. Just do the right things right.
You have control of certain things. When you're competing, the one thing you have control of is your effort and your attitude.
Correct.
You may not be able to tackle a guy in space.
Right.
You may not be able to get the perfect snap every time. You may not get the perfect punt every time. You may get tackled in space. You don't always control that because you're against the competition. But you can control your effort and your attitude.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
You have complete control of that.
So, Bobby, let me ask you. This kind of goes with this a little bit. You coached 25 years. Your special teams coach that whole time. You were the assistant head coach. I forget at which place, but I know from Buffalo. Okay. And I know from talking to you, I mean, that was certainly something you said it earlier on today, but that was something that you wanted. It didn't come. I think the NFL is starting to understand that the special teams coaches have a place as being a head coach at some point in time. I would argue just as much, if not more, because of the fact of how they deal with the whole team all the time. But can you talk about how that was for you? Because I'm sure there were times where you thought maybe you were going to have a chance somewhere, maybe you interviewed for some jobs. I don't know, but for whatever reason, that didn't happen. How did you deal with that? And was it difficult, or was it just a mentality of just pounding the rock?
Well, it was a little bit of both. I thought a couple of times I would be the head coach. I don't know if that was just me and my mother's opinion, but
right.
For whatever reason, and probably lack of ability again, I didn't get it because of lack of ability, lack of whatever. And so it was a real disappointment. And I knew I come from a little bit of an underdog mentality. I walked on in college, and none of the coaches I played for in college coached very much past the years I was in college. So I didn't have a lot of contacts. And so I had to grind, and I love my pedigree because I started in high school.
Yeah.
And to be able to go from, cutting the grass to lining the fields to taping the ankles, teaching history to being a GA, to being the youngest guy on the staff,
mm-hmm.
To then getting to the NFL. How fortunate can a guy, just a regular guy from Chalmette, Louisiana, coaching at USC and Ohio State? I mean, come on, are you crazy? That's like, and then the coach in the NFL for all those years. So I didn't stop pounding the rock.
Right. Evident.
I had to grunt through it a few days,
Right.
To get back to normal. So yeah, it hurt. It hurt. But only, I guess it hurt because, I in my mind, I'd really worked hard for it and studied hard for it and did my homework. But the owners didn't see it that way, and they have every prerogative and they have every wisdom on what they need to do for their program. So I was able to accept that. But yes, it was hard. Yeah, it was.
So I
had trained for it as a special teams coach while I was doing special teams work. In my mind, I was daily training to be the head coach. And I had, I had a lot of years of that training.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a good lesson, really, in the fact of not letting something eat you up. I mean, clearly you're okay with the things now, and you're at peace and enjoying retirement and whatever. That was a dream that would have happened. And I think that's something that is important, is sometimes things just don't go our way. And
correct.
If you stay mad at it and you're resentful, I mean, that's like, drinking poison and expecting somebody else to die. It just doesn't work that way. And I think that's a great lesson. You were going to say something, Lamont? I'm sorry.
Well, it's interesting because, there's a couple of things. And, I look at my career and I came into the NFL from being a college coach and wanting to, become a general manager. It was a good path, the Chiefs, and I thought that was going to happen. And then player development started. And God had something different. So now I'm giving a program to kind of try to develop. And who thought that something that was a 12-minute VHS tape given to me by somebody to watch would turn into a 24-year career in National Football League? I mean, I could have been a GM for 1 year, 2 years, and got fired and been out, right? Coach April, you look at your career, it's like, okay, I could have been a head coach for 2 or 3 years, right? And then now I'm out of the league, after 5 years. You've been in this thing over 25 years. So you know, I think, you know, I think we're all placed in this league. We should strive for whatever it is, GM, head coach, whatever it is you want to get to. But I think what you've done, coach, is you didn't miss what was in front of you. What was in front of you were these young men. What was in front of you were, you were part of a team. You had, you know, 16 targets, right? 17 targets, right? That we had to get to. And along the way, and like Kendall said, you were able to kind of like, and you said, you know, you controlled your attitude. So when no came, you had a choice, right?
Yeah.
You controlled your attitude, and then you controlled your effort. You could have been like, okay, I can do this and just do it with my eyes closed, or I can do it with a level of excellence, right? And I think that's where I think that when guys that played for you could see that, right?
I think it has a lot to do with gratitude. And I think, there's important figures in your life, and a father is one of them. And, if at any time I would have complained or been bitter about my job or my career, my father passed away in 2001, but, I would have gotten a very, very stern confrontation from him.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Well, to our listeners that are listening, I hope that until we get Bobby back, you're listening to experience that you can apply to your life, because I'm sure all of us are dealing with something or not getting something that we want, right?
Right.
Not attaining, and it's so easy to blame somebody else for it not happening.
Right. Well, I think also, and he impressed upon me this when I was in New Orleans, because there were some coaches there that I played for that I dealt with on the assistant side of things that, I mean, I'll just be plain and simple, could not stand them. I didn't think they were good people. Mm-hmm. And it caused me literally to think about retiring. That's how irritated I was. And I was able to talk with Bobby about that some openly and know that he wasn't going to go tell people. And he kind of really helped save me from that, which is a huge deal. I mean, I think Bobby's not the first coach, and especially special teams coach in the league, who's very accomplished, who didn't get a chance to be a head coach, nor will he be the last. I mean, this is one of those last bastions that I think is going to get figured out, I think.
Coach Jamil shared, you know, maybe people don't know that he was the actual first special teams coach in National Football League. That was how he came. And it came from high school. He's like, and as a matter of fact, wasn't that crazy? He had members of his high school football team at the Hall of Fame. I mean, folks, can you believe he had members of his high school football team, Millsdale High School, there at the Hall of Fame? And like you said, he told it, he got his first shot in the NFL as a special teams coach when the league didn't know what that was.
Yeah, that was with George Allen. Is that correct?
Yeah.
He was their head coach. Well, and something that really stuck out to me, not that the other recipients didn't thank people, but that's basically all Coach Vermeil did. And of course, we're going to talk to him in our next episode, but that's all he really did was thank people for the difference that they made in his life, and understand that without their help, or without players playing well and having a big game in the Rose Bowl, as he put it, none of that would have been possible. I think that's huge when we realize that we do nothing alone. We absolutely do nothing alone.
And I think that what Bobby said, it was that gratitude, you know.
Here
through Coach April, and it's this gratitude. It's just, you know, staying with gratitude. And, you know, when you're grateful, you're thankful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's impossible to be grateful and bitter at the same time. You can only be one or the other. Right. Coach, did we get you back?
I hope so. I don't know what happened.
There you go.
Oh, we got you. Hey, technology's not perfect.
Well, no, I don't think it's on your end. I think we're having we've been having a lot of thunderstorms here, and maybe somewhere in the weather and the clouds or something may have happened.
Well, I can tell you, I don't miss any of that humidity down there. That's for sure.
Well, you know, we have it.
I know.
But like I said, I think the gratitude part was taught to me by my father.
Yeah.
And so I was very grateful, and that was a key asset to have when you're, well, in anything, you know,
right.
Any endeavor in life, if you have that, you've got a commodity that is precious.
Yeah. And so, Coach, Lamont and I talked about this earlier on, but we're curious your thoughts. I mean, you were in those meetings for training camp. You know, we like to talk about what the players are going through right now, and it's camp, which is just, it's no fun. I don't care how much you love football. In my mind, it's just not the greatest. And it's stressful because there's 90 guys there and only 53 are going to make it through. Can you talk, without names, but can you talk about, some of the things you were in as far as how heated those meetings may get in terms of dealing with the players that are going to make the team and how important special teams is in that equation?
That's a really good question, because for and only the last, 4 or 5 years of my career, I had an assistant. So I spoke as a lone entity.
Yeah.
For that area. And probably came off looking really, really selfish to many of my coaching comrades, because I was fighting for that area. And in most cases, I was outnumbered, 5-1 on the 5-1 defense. And, if there were people that I really wanted, but they didn't, I would try to make a convincing argument to the head coach, the general manager, about why this person was important. And I would, probably sometimes might not be as diplomatic as I should. But at the same time, if I didn't fight for that player, that I felt was...
Right, could make a difference.
And again, I wasn't... If I was fighting for... I hope I didn't mess up by moving this phone. If I was fighting for a player, let's say at cornerback, I wasn't saying, let's keep this player and cut Rod Woodson.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wasn't, I wasn't trying to just destroy the whole team. I was talking about maybe with the sixth corner or the fifth corner.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where, or the fifth receiver. I wasn't looking to get rid of Terrell Owens.
Right.
I mean,
But as a head coach, that's what you want.
Let's get rid of this guy. I don't want this this guy. I want this guy. He's going to be – it wasn't one of those. I mean, it was one of those where this guy, for me, was going to play 20, 25 plays in 20, 25 productive plays. And how many is he going to play on offense?
Yeah, as a head coach, you want somebody who's going to get on the table for their guys, right? You don't want somebody that's just going to go along with it. And I remember you telling me a few stories that you did that. I think, it's interesting, in this day and age, and of course, us being in Kansas City, Coach Reed, the one thing he gives Dave Tobe, who is the assistant head coach, by the way, as a special teams coach, he gives him two players that basically, for the most part, he can pick. He's going to get a couple of players that he thinks are four core, and no matter what, they're going to figure it out. And I'm guessing that would have been a luxury for you had you had that your entire career.
I never had that ever in my career. Wish I would have a couple times when I had leverage. I wish I would have put that in my contract. I really do. I really think about it, because some places I had tremendous leverage and I didn't. But I never had that. And that is, that is a great way to do it. And it's a very successful way to do it. Well, with the main, talking to coaches that are in your audience at any level, the biggest way to sabotage special teams is, you know, there's an old axiom, you know, you got to make it on special teams before you make it.
Right.
To have the very best special teams player, your top performer that you're giving accolades to, that you're saying great things about, and you're using as an example. The biggest way to sabotage special teams is then when that player gets cut.
Right.
Because you have said, and the head coach has said over and over, that that statement, you know, you're going to make it on special teams. And if you can right. make it on special, and then when they cut that guy, whoo, that is really a blow to the special teams area. I got to a point where later in my career, I would ask the head coach, unless we really mean this, please do not say it. Because.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it's the truth. It makes sense.
They're just going to sabotage you.
Yeah.
They're going to say, look, this guy's our best. I mean, because they can see it.
Right.
Did we lose Lamont by any chance, or did I?
Yeah, we did, but we'll get him back.
You know what I'm saying, Kendall. If a guy, you know, if Yancey Figpen is outperforming everybody in training camp,
right?
Every Steeler could see that.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, so it's and if you know the head coach is saying over and over that you guys that are, you know, down the line in at your position, you're going to make it by how you perform. And then you cut that guy. Now that didn't happen with Yancey, but you know, Yancey wasn't, when we were together at Pittsburgh, he wasn't the receiver he turned out to be.
Right.
He was a special teamer.
An incredibly gifted athlete too. I mean, unbelievable. One of the best I've ever been around.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's a tough deal. Don't tell a guy you can make it on this and then he's your top performer and then cut.
Well, it undermines your authority and the trust that players have in you and ultimately even the head coach, I would think.
Oh, it definitely undermines everything you said. And you're trying to regain and trying to motivate them after they know you're not as serious about it. So why should they be?
Yeah. We got you back, Lamont.
Yeah, that was a bizarre tech. It happens to everybody. So I can't explain it. Only Tucker can.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. So like, I know we're getting towards the end, Bobby, but I'm curious, and I'm sure Lamont will have a question as well, but you coached with a lot of legendary coaches. Can you put your finger on just one who really stands out and then maybe tell us why?
I'm going to have to express my Miranda rights.
Okay.
Because what I say in Duke can definitely be used against me by the other 10 coaches that I coached with.
Well understood.
Because if I didn't say Bill Cowher or Andy Reid or somebody, then Bill Cowher or Andy Reid would be very mad at me. so hence the Miranda right. I will say this though. Let me qualify it this way. The guy that had the most impact on me, because I just named two guys that are already in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Coach Reid is going to be.
Correct. Right.
And for you two guys, I'm so happy Coach Vermeil was in the Hall of Fame. I did not coach with Coach Vermeil, but I do know him. I got to know him when he was, a college commentator for ABC.
Yep.
And he did a ton of our games, and he would meet with us. And that guy is a great ambassador for football.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The person and the coach that he is. Now, that's a great way to get out of answering your question. However, the guy, I won't say the guy that was the best or anything like that. Maybe you didn't phrase it that way. But the guy, it's raining on me right now. So I'm moving. I hope this doesn't screw everything up. I
told you, good. We're fine.
The guy that had the most impact on me was Jerry Glanville. And the reason I say Jerry Glanville was because I came into the league, as a special teams coach.
Right.
But I had been trained on defense primarily. And he really did a great job of training me and helping me. And there's another coach that had a tremendous impact that actually got me into the league and got me the job. And Lamont, you know this young man, Keith Rowan.
Absolutely.
And his dad, Vic Rowan.
And he's my lead mentor. I coached and played for him.
Yeah, Coach Rowan was tremendous. Uh-huh. And anyway, those two guys, I mean, I was a flat novice at special teams. I mean, I coached one of the areas and that type of thing, but I didn't know all the nuances of coaching it. But those two guys, and they had other critical areas. Obviously, Jerry Glanville was the head coach. He didn't need to be spending that kind of time with me. And Keith Rowland was the offensive line coach. He didn't need to be spending that kind of time with me. But I say those two guys were very instrumental in my career because, you know, when you first come in, and when you get past 60, if you have a couple of years that are bombs, it's adios amigos. You probably aren't going to get into the league if your first couple of years are really bad. Mm-hmm. And if your last couple of years are really bad, you're not going to get back. At least that's the way, not scientifically, but that's the way I kind of remember seeing it through experience. Mm-hmm. So without those two guys helping me, like they did, I couldn't have survived, very long because I didn't have enough knowledge. I didn't have enough expertise. I knew how to coach. I knew football, but I didn't know really how to organize, where to put players. Even the NFL schemes, you know, was somewhat foreign to me.
So, Coach, here we go. So I got one for you. This should be fun. So how many pro football stops have you been to? How many teams?
Nine.
Nine. Okay. One player at each team that was, and it doesn't have to be the most talented guy, but your best special teams player at each place. That was your guy. That was your, you can say, wow. One player each team.
Okay. All right. Atlanta Falcons. Albert Shelley.
Okay.
Okay.
Pittsburgh Steelers. Kendall Gammon, of course.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Checks in the mail.
Checks in the mail. I was worried I wasn't going to get it, but now I know I'm getting it now. St. Louis Rams, Jeff Wilkins.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans Saints, Norm Johnson.
Wow.
Not Norm Johnson. Excuse me. Not Norm Johnson, I was about to say for the Steelers, and then I remembered about the check with Kendall. New Orleans Saints, Doug Bryan, kicker.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis Rams, Jeff Wilkins, kicker. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia Eagles. Oh, boy. We had let me think about this. There was a couple of close guys there.
Who? We don't want dead time on the radio. All right. You're going to have to put a place in
next
there.
Next team.
All right. Oakland Raiders. I got to say Tywan Jones.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you would agree with that, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
New York Jets. Give me a pass on that one.
Got your pass.
You pass anytime you like.
I got a pass on that one. And, you know, I didn't say Buffalo, did I?
You did not.
Blake Costanzo.
Okay.
Blake Costanzo. Do you guys remember him?
I remember the name.
He was a really, really just outstanding player. Let me go back to the Eagles. I gotta say, there's a couple of guys here and there. I gotta say Dave Akins, the kicker.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I gotta go with
Dave Akers.
And then
yep.
At Tennessee,
I love doing this to coaches, Coach April. I love it.
Boy, you know, because there's a lot. If I say this, you know, there might be somebody out there in the audience, so I got to make sure the guy was – there's not too many ties in there, you know. You know what? I'm gonna just say a tie on Tennessee.
Okay.
High on Tennessee. I can't put one guy over another there.
Well, we just wanted to make sure, hey, Ken, we wanted to make sure since you used the Miranda rights on the coaches one, we wanted to make sure that we got you with your players.
Boy, I really wanted to use it again, but I don't think you can use it on two.
Well, he's thinking like these end of the hour questions are tough, and we didn't give him due diligence on this before.
Well, no. Yeah, here's the thing. It's not that they're tough. It's just that anytime you compare,
right,
you're gonna exalt one, and you might insult 100. I mean, you might insult 100. So,
I was
leery of doing it, but for you guys, hey, I walked the plank.
Right, we appreciate it. Hey, Bobby, I know it's time to let you go, and appreciate you taking the time. But from my standpoint, obviously, playing for you for 6 years. You made a big difference in my life, not just on the field, but I think more importantly off. So I'll tell you thank you, and I know our listeners had a great time, and I'll let Lamont say something as well.
Coach April, it was a pleasure. Hey, and I know in Atlanta, I thought you'd say Dion, but that's okay. But
well, let me say this. It could vary. that's what I mean. And you know what? Dion might be mad because.
Okay.
I will hit my own horn here for a second. I was shocked and amazed in Dion's speech, although he thanked a lot of people, he thanked me. So I might get a call from him and say,
okay,
you son of a gun, I gave you praise, and then on the show you named Albert Shelley. Albert Shelley was a great player there.
His name may
not be household, but he was great. I'm going to let you guys go. I know you got a time clock.
I just want to say thank you for the time we got a chance to spend in Oakland. It made a difference for sure. And I got a chance to watch you work and change lives, and you impacted mine. So I really want to thank you. And I'm glad you were able to be on our show for us.
Well, to both of you, you're real pros, and that's the highest compliment I can ever give a guy in any profession. And you both are, and above and beyond that, character wise you're exemplary, and I'm very thankful to be on. I hope some young man has gained from your podcast, and I wish you guys peace and happiness always.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Well, right there, Bobby, I mean, not many guys coach 25 years in the league, Lamont. I know you know that just as well as I do. And he was a difference maker. He was very well respected, still is, quite honestly. And one thing we didn't talk about was probably either before or after he's going to go and get some pickleball on in, because I've talked to him and that's one of his passions now.
Okay. Well, you know, Kendall, that's right. I think you just look at just the question, whether it posed me in about, you know, the coach that was the most impactful or the players. I mean, you know, it's so hard because, you know, and, you know, especially with players, they're not household names, but for that gentleman, he was able to build his special teams around those particular individuals. Those were his, what they call Kendall core guys. Like those are like legitimate core guys. Right. And to those guys' credit, they end up having 4, 5, 6 year careers. That's a good career in National Football League.
Yeah. And I thought it was very telling. I mean, there was a lot of information in there, but just, I think it was really good for people to hear how Dion was with him. And it's nice when you hear about somebody who is, as he said, kind of larger than life, a little bit larger than the game at times. Yet it appears from what he told us, and I'd heard this before, that Dion just didn't take anything for granted and that he was unbelievably competitive. And I think no matter what you do in life, if you can do that, you've got a chance. And that's a nice lesson to learn, no doubt.
You know, yeah, and I would say this, you know, to all of the young athletes that are listening out there, male and female, you know, one of the things Coach April said was this respect thing. So Dion respected coaches, regardless of his respected coaches. Thus, his career is in coaching, right? So you know, never sell young listeners that they'll never sell that respect level thing too cheap, because coaches, that's relationships, and those coaches are the ones that help you ascend in your career. So it was great to have Coach April. He is a fantastic human being and a tremendous team coach, man, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, again, as always, a great time. He is Lamont Winston, the OG of player development in the NFL. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at Lamont Winston, A-L-M-O-N-T-E, Winston. And then, or if you want to give me a follow at Kendall Gammon, love to hear anything you have to say about the show or anything in general, or some people you think you'd like to have on. We'd love to hear about it. We're going to have one Hall of Famer on the next time is Coach Dick Vermeil. You and I were at his induction ceremonies. We talked about it briefly today, but we'll talk about that in more depth in our next episode, and we'll have Dick Vermeil himself on. So it should be great. As always, Lamont, pleasure being associated with you. I appreciate you slumming with me, and it was a great time.
We always have fun on Beyond the Game.
Bye-bye now. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.